Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Overtime Show with Mike Wood, coming to you live from the City of Medicine, Durham, North Carolina, on this, the 8th day of June 2016. Hang on, ladies and gentlemen, I said it when we started out this year, January 2nd, we did our first show of the year. I said, on January 2nd, it's almost Christmas. And here it is, June the 8th. And ladies and gentlemen, it's closer to Christmas than it was then. Hey, got a special guest today for you, coming straight to you from Norfolk, Virginia, the head football coach of the Spartans. And he will be here live on the show, and that's Latrell Scott, and he'll talk about Spartan football this year. As you well know, the MEAC is probably the most rough and tumble conference in the country in football, basketball, baseball, you name it. Good athletes, good tradition, great schools, and we'll talk to Coach Scott about that. Also, a programming note for tomorrow, don't forget, live right here on the Overtime Sports Show, hey, we're going to have Kyle Serba, the Sports Information Director at North Carolina Central University. He's going to be on, and I'm going to tell you, that's a show you really don't want to miss. It's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. Well, right now on the Overtime Hotline, we have Coach Scott, Latrell Scott. Coach Scott, welcome to the Overtime Sports Show.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, let's jump right into it, Coach. Tell our listeners out there, who are not familiar, and I don't know who in the world would not be familiar with Norfolk State, with their great tradition, the history of putting out tremendous athletes, not only athletes educating our young people, great job down there in Norfolk. I grew up in that area. I'm from a little town called Murfreesboro, North Carolina, right down the road a piece, as they say, from Norfolk State. Tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Well, I was born and raised in Richmond, Virginia. Been a Virginia kid my entire life. Actually, I'm a Hampton University graduate, so I played football across the water.
Wow.
At HU. And, you know, my wife and I are both graduates of Hampton University. But I started my coaching career at Fort Union Military Academy. I left Fort Union and went to Western Carolina University. After Western Carolina, it was VMI. Left VMI, went to the University of Richmond as an assistant. Left the University of Richmond to go coach the receivers at the University of Tennessee. Next stop was the University of Virginia. As a receivers coach, came back to the University of Richmond as the head coach. Left Richmond, took a tight ends job at James Madison as an assistant, and I was the head coach at Virginia State for two seasons. We won two CIAA championships. Very fortunate to have a great staff and great group of kids there. And after winning those two championships, we got a call from Norfolk State, and got to Norfolk State last year, so there's my moving van in a nutshell.
Yeah, I tell you, a lot of places, but as a lot of people don't understand in the coaching profession, especially from those outside looking in, that's part of the process of becoming a head coach at any level, is you have to experience all the levels, for the most part, and different positions in order to get there. It's not like, hey, Mike, come on, we want you to be the head coach, and you haven't done anything. It's not going to work that way in college. I mean, you know, high school, it might go. You might can fly with that. You might can sell real estate on Monday and coach football on Wednesday. Doesn't work that way in college. I mean, it's a process to go through. Let's talk about this year's team. Now, I understand you have some additions to that team that, of course, is going to make the team better. That's what you go out and recruit for, and some very strong players coming in from other D1 programs and just, you know, transfers, whatever. Talk about your players coming in this year.
We're very proud of the recruiting class that our staff put together. We have a young, dynamic recruiting coordinator by the name of Christian Parker. Christian's family is actually from Kinston, North Carolina, so he's a North Carolina kid. And, you know, but what our staff really did was we targeted a certain amount of guys, and we went out and did everything we could possibly do to sell Norfolk State and sell ourselves and sell our program. So we've got on paper a nationally ranked recruiting class, and we've been able to add two North Carolina FBS transfers from NC State and East Carolina. So it's a class that's on paper that has the potential to be really good. I think it ended up being about 17 or 18 guys. So hopefully we can take these guys and mix these guys with the class that we signed last year and the talent that we already had on campus, and hopefully this is a group that can help turn this program around.
Yeah, you know, I watched you guys play last year when you came up to Durham and played North Carolina Central, and I had a chance to watch it from pillar to post. And, you know, what I noticed the most was you were about – and this is no joke. I mean, North Carolina Central is not a bad football team, but you were about an offensive lineman and probably that good, strong outside running back away from, like, I mean, like, running the table. I'm serious. People can say what they want to. They ask me all the time, who do you think in the MEAC has the biggest chance to improve and get better? And the first thing I say, the first name out of my mouth is Norfolk State. I'm telling you, Coach, you're almost right there. What did you do to shore up that defensive line and that offensive line? And you got the outside speed, just that kid who – and he was young too, but just the kid to learn how to make those cuts at the right time. You know, how to use the borders and all that stuff. But how have you shored up your offense and defense this year?
Well, first of all, you're right. Jerry Mack's done a tremendous job down there at Central. And, you know, Jerry's a program that we've got to catch. And you're exactly right. I think our offensive line was a glaring weakness a year ago, and we did everything that we could do in the recruiting process to solidify that. We, you know, signed three kids mid-year from 14, and we signed another five kids out of high school, so we'll have eight brand new offensive linemen to help shore up that group, and I think we're fine in our running back situation. We had some injuries last year, but I think in Gerard Johnson, Quintrell Chung, we've got two really talented running backs, and our quarterback's pretty dynamic as well. You know, I think he had a pretty good day down there at Central. I think just defensively, we've got to put our kids in the best possible situation defensively. I think we have a very talented team. Obviously, we're missing the National Player of the Year, and Deion King was down with the Cowboys now. But we've had some guys step in and fill some holes. And I think defensively, we've just got to be sound and then play smart. And like I said, as a staff, make sure we're putting our kids in the best possible situation. But you said it yourself. The MEAC's tough. You look at what Coach Sims is doing down at Bethune, and you know Coach Pugh's always going to be good. And we're all chasing Coach Broadway. So at the end of the day, I just hope that late in the season, we're still in the conversation.
Yeah, one thing I noticed about your team also was the longer the game went, the more physical your defense became. I mean, in the fourth quarter, they were flying around the same as the first play of the first quarter. And if you get a group of kids that can buy into that, being an old defensive coordinator myself, if you can get a bunch of kids that are flying around and putting a head on somebody in the fourth quarter, as hard as they are the first quarter, you got something to work with. There's a process there to work with. Those little puppies will bite. You know what I'm saying? They will go out there and they continue to put their head on people. Now, defensively, let me ask you this. This is a question I always love to ask MEAC coaches. Do you think the MEAC is mostly an offensive conference or defensive-dominated conference?
I think it depends on the week. You know, you could have never told me that we'd go down and there'd be a 100-point game between us and Bethune. You know, and then you come back the next week and it's a 22-point game against Howard. I think you know, week in, week out, you know, the teams in this league have the ability to do a lot of things. I think when you look at the teams, obviously, you know, A&T's bread and butter is handing the ball to Tariq Cohen. You know, Bethune's explosive on offense. You know, Jerry has playmakers there at Central, but everybody has, you know, the ability to stop you on defense. You know, if you look at all the draft picks in MEAC this year were defensive players, you know, so it tells you a lot about the balance of the conference.
And, you know, I look at your conference schedule this year. You'll open up with Elizabeth City State in the Labor Day Classic. Then you travel to Richmond to play Richmond, and then you play William & Mary. Now, that's a pretty – well, with Richmond in there, that's a pretty tough – opening three games of the season. You know, Elizabeth City State, HBU, old-time CIAA versus old-time CIAA. You really never know what's going to happen when teams like that get together. You just don't know. But I see you have, you know, and then you throw in the MEAC. The quality of MEAC play, do you find it difficult to get teams to want to play you now? I can go back to the fact that when North Carolina Central beat NC State in basketball, and, you know, beat them in overtime on national television, basically. Now, when the caller ID shows the calls coming in from North Carolina Central, they act like they're not home. So do you find that it is difficult to schedule nationally? Do you find it more difficult now because they know that you're getting better, you're getting better kids, and you could beat them than it was, let's say, 10 years ago when you were at some of the other HBCUs?
Well, I think having spent most of my life, you know, with the exception of college, at the non-HBCUs, I think years ago there was a thought process of, well, you know, we play these guys, and if we don't beat them by enough, it's a negative, and if we lose, it's a double negative. But I think what's happened now is with travel budgets and just changing of the guard, you have coaches like myself, like Jerry, like Terry Sims, like Kenny Carter that have coached with and against a lot of these other coaches from these FCS programs. They're more willing to play. And, you know, it makes sense for us to play Richmond and William and Mary and James Madison because it saves all of us money. And people want to see Norfolk State play William and Mary. You know, when you look at some of the other things that are going on in some of the other conferences, you have teams from Virginia playing teams in Texas and they call it a conference game. You
right.
Know, that's not really, you know, that's not really conducive for fans, you know. So if you can get A&T and Elon to play, it makes sense for the kids' parents to be able to, you know, drive an hour to see him play. So I think it's a little bit less of a stigma than it was a year ago. And I think if you look at it, Richmond is a Final Four team last year and really didn't beat Hampton until the last drive of the game last year. And
right.
You know, I was the head coach at Richmond, and I've coached in the CAA a long time, and believe me, I think that's one of the better conferences in FCS football. And if we're going to be competitive at all in the MEAC, we definitely got to be able to be competitive against the Richmonds and the William & Marys. We'll know a lot about Nova State by the time we get to MEAC play, that's for certain.
Yeah, we here in Durham, you know, we had Duke right here in Durham, and Central in Durham would not play. I mean, period. Duke just would not play us. I understand we were Division II with CIAA at the time. Then we moved up to Division I, and the only reason that they got into a game with us and called the Bull City Classic was because of that tragic incident with the lacrosse team, and Duke was trying to save face and all that stuff. So we start playing each other, and all of a sudden, you know what really was amazing about that? The very second that Duke and North Carolina Central start playing each other, both schools found out, especially Duke found out, we already knew that. Do you know there's a lot of support for this game? You know, I mean, really, they looked around and the entire stadium was full. Packed. Wallace Wade never gets packed. I don't even care if it's graduation. It never gets packed. And that place is packed, and everybody gets along. They have fun. They tailgate. It's become one of the social events of the season down here. I mean, it's like people love to play that game. And I believe if some of the other schools, you know, would – also take heed to stuff like that, not let tragic accidents happen, but make sure, or incidents happen, but make sure that, you know, we're taking care of each other here in this city. There's enough money to go around in this city, believe you me. And you're finding out they're probably in Norfolk and Richmond area. That's a lot of dollars out there for both the schools. But we got to start that relationship. We got to build that partnership. And a lot of good things have come out of that classic here, the Bull City Classic here in Durham. I mean, a lot of great things. You know, mentoring programs, everything has come out of that. So, you know, I applaud schools like Richmond and William & Mary who get involved with playing, you know, teams on MEAC or the SWAC or the SIAC or whoever it is they want to play. But at least they're keeping it right there in the area. And you're absolutely right. It makes sense. Why travel all the way to Oklahoma when Duke is right down the road, less than 6 miles from the campus, you know? So that's what we do. Now, another thing too, let me ask you about your, this is a question I ask a lot of coaches also, a question that was asked of me. Why do you coach? Why did you want to become a coach? Because there's something inside you, whether it's insanity or whatever it is, that makes you want to be a coach. So what drives you to coaching these young men and want to lead them forward?
Well, I was like every other college football player. I was going to play professional football for the rest of my life. I have a great career and ride off into the sunset. But that didn't quite work out that way. So I got into it because initially it was my way to stay around the game. But obviously now it's a situation where you get an opportunity to teach and mentor and see people grow. You know, some of my best friends and mentors in the world are guys that coach me, you know, guys that I play for, guys that I respect. And, you know, you don't realize how much of a pedestal you put on because of the things that you do for kids in their life. And, you know, when you get the opportunity to see a young man, you know, graduate, and he goes off and he's got a great job and he's got a family and he comes back and says thanks, it's something that, you know, makes you feel tremendous. And I don't know what else I could do for a living. I tell my wife all the time, you know, if they come and tell me I can't coach anymore, God bless the person that just tries to hire me for a regular job.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I found the most, and I'm like you, Coach, when, you know, I coach kids, like, I started my coaching career in 1985, and, you know, that was a long time ago, and I'll be broadcasting now. I do broadcast from North Carolina Central. I'll be broadcasting, and these kids that I coached way back in 85, 86, 87 on, do you know they stop by and they say, hello, I'm doing great, Coach. Thanks for what you did for me, and give me a big old hug. Now, let me tell you something. I don't know about you, but all the hours that you really don't make that much money, you make like 25 cents an hour, all the time you spend watching film, all the time you spend just doing football things, it made it all worth it. That one thank you, Coach, made it all worth it. I mean, I get choked up every time I think about it. Kids come up all the time. Thank you, Coach, for something you said. Thank you, Coach, for something you did. And then top it all off, when the kids come back, I don't know if this has happened to you or not, and they're coaches too, because you coach them and they love what you did and how you treat the players, and they decide to become a coach too. Now, that right there is just like, wow.
Yeah, it's a special feeling. You know, I have a host of guys that have you know, played for me. I'm only 40 years old, so you know, this is my 15th season. You know, and it's fun for me to see my players come back, and guys have great jobs, and you coach against them, and you know, you hire them. And my staff is comprised of about 75% of guys that I've coached at Richmond and Virginia State and at Tennessee and places like that. So that's another positive to it also, is that you get the opportunity to help these guys get their start in the business.
You know, this happened. I joke with the head coach all the time. I said, if any one of these players I ever coached, if their kid ever comes back and plays for me, I'm going to retire. One day at practice, I'm sitting there, I'm calling the roll, first day of practice, and this name comes up. And I said, I know that name. And I called the kid. I said, I know you. I know you're a kid used to play for me back in 89 with that name. Oh, yeah, Coach, that's my dad. I looked at the head coach and said, I now retire.
I'm not that old. I hadn't gotten there yet.
I know. You know, I didn't want to stay around till some kid came up and said, yeah, Coach, that's my great-granddad. Ooh, no, I'm not doing that one. But anyway, well, Coach, if a player's out there, or a young player, athlete, or just a kid contemplating going to college and getting an education, which it's first and foremost, by the way, football is a privilege, not a right. The privilege of being there is you got to make the grades, you got to do what you're supposed to do, and follow the process. That's what champions do. What would you tell someone that wants to come to Norfolk State and get that quality education?
Well, obviously, I think Norfolk State's a great place because we're going to surround you with the best possible people that we can. One thing I told the president and athletic director when they hired me was that, you know, you have to give me the ability to hire great staff. And I think first and foremost, when parents are looking for a place like that, they want to make sure that they're sending their young man somewhere that's an extension of family. And we tell guys all the time, we're going to give you every opportunity to be successful. We're going to give you every opportunity to get your degree. You know, we don't promise you that you're going to be an NFL student. We don't promise you that you're going to be a rocket scientist, but we do promise you that we're going to give you the opportunity, and we're going to treat you fair, and we're going to teach you about life. You know, it's not going to be all fun. We're going to have a great time, but at the end of the day, we're going to make sure we teach you and mentor you, and the base goal of our program is to make sure that you're better at 22 than you are at 18, and
amen.
We tell kids that all the time.
Now, also, a quick question before I let you go. I noticed that a lot of HBCUs, the SWAC has these problems, the MEAC has these problems, SIAC, you name it, and even some of the other conferences too. But it's a glaring issue with HBCU conferences, more or less, this APR issue. Do you think that because HBCUs are in such a unique type situation, you know, we can bring these kids in and, you know, bring them in, give them the tools necessary to be successful, but we all know that success sometimes extends only as far as their home life will let them go. In other words, at times, you know, they have to leave school because they have to work because somebody got laid off or somebody is sick or you know, they're the first generation college and there's other problems. And it counts against the school, even though the school in good faith said, we will help you as much as we can, but you can only help us so much. But how do you think that APR rule should be changed or just gotten rid of because of the uniqueness of some of the situations that HBCUs run into?
It's tough for me to say whether it should be, you know, gotten rid of, but I think there are definite modifications that can be made. And I think it's not just HBCU situations because kids have to leave school, kids decide to leave school. There are a lot of different situations that make kids, you know, because you're penalized for transfers and you're penalized, you know, for things that guys do. And, you know, like I know the mind of an 18, 19-year-old, you don't know what they're going to do next. So a kid may want to be at UVA one day and be at Norfolk State the next. But I think the biggest thing that I stress to my staff when we go out and we recruit is we have a model and we have a profile. And we try to pick the right kids. And then we're not always right. But I think we try to pick kids that fit our profile and kids that are going to be able to do the schoolwork and that are going to be able to maintain, you know, satisfactory academic progress. Because obviously, if a young man really, really struggles and doesn't put forth effort in high school, he's going to struggle in college. And if he doesn't go to class in high school, he's not going to go to high school, you know, go to class in college. So I think part of the thing that we can do as HBCUs and just you know, college football coaches in general is try to make sure we're identifying the right kids.
Yeah, it's a very, you know, it's so in 20, you know, back in the 80s, when I went to school, I understood that when I went to Winston-Salem State University my freshman year, I had to get them to go to class because that was ingrained in me because my mother was a teacher, my dad was a cop, and he was a stickler about rules, of course. You know, and some of these kids now, you're right, they go to school, they don't even get up out of bed to go to class. I know in my circumstance, there will be a knock at the door. There'll be a woman standing there about 5'2", and she would give me a left, right, and a two-piece of fries because I didn't get up and go. But it's not that way now. You know, the kids are not disciplined that way now. It is tough. You just don't know what they're going to do. Now it seems like, to a certain degree, some of them are more interested in Dre Beats than they are anything else. And it's, you know, I know it's a fight. It's a totally different world from the 80s, 90s, and now you're into a new century, 2000. It's just a totally different world. They have so many more things to distract them. One last thing before I let you go. I don't remember the player's name, but last year when you guys came here to Durham to play, one of your players got injured. I think it was like in the second quarter or something like that, and it absolutely – I saw exactly what happened, and it scared me to death. That is the first time that I know of that O'Kelly Brennick Stadium went quiet. I mean quiet. You remember that. It was just quiet. How is that young man doing? What was his name and how is he doing now?
His name is Haji Gaylord, and really it was the next thing. It scared all of us to death, but obviously you have to be so careful with these neck injuries. And, you know, they took him over to the hospital, and he was actually able to come home the same night, and he played about 2 weeks later, you know, so it was nothing structural. It was just a muscular deal, and he's doing great. I saw him working out yesterday. He's doing a great job in class, and he's getting bigger and stronger, and, you know, it's just one of those things that scares you to death and puts everything in perspective, but fortunately, he's doing just fine.
Yeah, I tell you, let me tell you something. I was over there, I was in the end zone area, and I was praying so hard, man, because I saw exactly how the injury occurred, and it's when it happened, everything just went out. He just went down. That was it. And I saw that when you came on the field, I saw the look on your face, and then after you came over and talked to the trainer, And then, you know, I really saw the look on your face like, oh, my, you know. And so I just, you know, I just wanted to just check in on him and make sure he was okay, because it's only a game. You know, we fight against each other in the MEAC. We, you know, we rag on each other all the time, but it's all one big family. And we don't want any kid anywhere, anytime to get injured or get hurt to the point that they can't, you know, continue with their life, you know. And that really just, I still get shook up every time I think about that. Well, Coach, I'm glad he's okay, and thank you so very much for appearing here on the Overtime Sports Show. I'm sure I'll be seeing you later on. I'll come up and introduce myself, because we're coming down to Norfolk this year, so I'll probably be coming down with the team. And I'll come up and introduce myself, and I just want to say thank you so much for appearing here on the Overtime Sports Show.
No, it sounds good now, wasn't it? Do you do any work with Jonathan Dern over there?
Unfortunately, yes. I work with Jonathan Durer. That is my cross to bear. Yes. Jonathan's a good kid. He is really, you know what? He is one of the, I like to call him the young lions in this business. He is going to do very, very well. He's good.
It's funny. I've known him since he was young. His oldest brother and I are Lion brothers from Hampton. So it's been funny to kind of watch him grow and listen to him do the radio. And I always tell him, I say, look, if you ever say anything bad about me, I know your mom and dad, and I can do whatever I want to do to you. So, but he is definitely talented, and I appreciate you having me on, and definitely look us up. And if there's anything we can do for you during the season, let me know.
Okay, Coach, I will do. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
All right, thanks, Mike. Have a great night.
All right, now, that was Coach Latrell Scott, the head football coach at Norfolk State University in Norfolk, Virginia, one of the good guys around the world of sports. You know, right here on the Overtime Sports Show, we don't talk to bad people. You know, he is one of the good guys. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to get him on the show, because he is doing great things down there at Norfolk State. Look, there are great things going on all over the MEAC, and there are great things going on all over the country. And, you know, we need to let people know about this. We need to let them know about the Dillards and all the other little schools that don't get that much bump. That's what I specialize in here on the Overtime Sports Show, is, you know, trying to get the good out. Every day we hear about the bad. Every day we hear about the evil. Every day we hear about kids not going to class, or we hear about people on NCAA probation. Let's talk about the teams who do it right. Let's talk about the people who do it right and who care for those kids. And that's what you find all over the MEAC, from pillar to post. And so I just want to say, on behalf of me, I am truly blessed to have any part of working with the MEAC. You know, broadcasting North Carolina Central Athletics is one of the highlights of my life. And, you know, like I say, meeting people. I have not met anybody anywhere at any school in the MEAC that I have felt unwelcome. It's like one big family, and I'm not lying when I say that. I really mean that. It's like one big family. And so, hey, you can't ask for anything more than that. Well, tomorrow night, coming up right here on the Overtime Sports Show, going to be the show of the year, Cal Serba, Sports Information Director at North Carolina Central, will be on, and that's a show you don't want to miss. Deborah Cousins will be on the 13th of this month from the Durham County Foster Parent Program on 614. Latonya Lamonte from Winston-Salem State University, she's a brand-new head coach there. She's going to be on also. And on the 20th of June, Adrian Jones, the head coach at Shaw University, used to be at North Carolina Central. Once again, the trees of coaching are extending, the branches are getting longer and longer from North Carolina Central University. So, until tomorrow night, 6:30, Linda will be back tomorrow night, 6:30, right here on the Overtime Sports Show, Kyle Serba. Until then, goodbye, everybody.